friends and folks, and welcome back to Romance of the Two Networks. However, it is just Scanlane Media this week. We had to tell the other network to shoo so I could find a way to woo.
Oh, six.
This is the Three Kingdoms. I'm Six Damar from Scanlane Media.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanlane Media.
Our co-hosts, M and Jackson from Abnormal Mapping, are not feeling up to it this week. So, unfortunately, this would be our second week in a row of taking week off, and we didn't want to do that. So instead, we're going to give you a nice little filler episode. No chapters this week. Instead, we're going to talk about the three kingdoms as they are represented in various video games. If you're looking for an accompaniment to your reading, or if you're like, hey, I'm just going to listen to this podcast, I'm not going to read the book, but I want to play some video games. There are some video games based on these books out there, believe it or not. And some of them are even good.
Yeah, and I imagine there's at least one or two of these that are responsible for many of you, including myself, hearing about Three Kingdoms in the first place.
Yeah, I think the origins of, at least, so my understanding of the chain of events, I don't remember how Jackson, I think what happened was Jackson was on the Dynasty Warriors, like, some Dynasty Warriors forum, and there was a thread about what's your favorite translation of Three Kingdoms, which led Jackson to start reading, which led me to start reading, and then be like, hey, you should start reading too.
Yeah, I think the
chain of events.
Yeah, I think the forum thread was titled something like, so does anyone actually want to read the books? Or something like that.
Yeah, but as it turned out, people were like, well, I already do, jerk. I already have my bachelorette isn't it degree, I'm sorry. Bachelor. No. Anyway, we have been playing some Three Kingdoms based video games, and I think as we just mentioned, sort of the not the grandfather of them, there are definitely older ones, but the one that is probably the most responsible for getting at least Westerners into the idea is Dynasty Warriors.
Yeah, specifically for me, I remember picking up Dynasty Warriors 3 Extreme Legends a while ago with my brother, just because we were looking for something that was character action, and this one had a person on the cover with a massive sword or a weapon like that, and it was like, oh, okay, this seems cool. And it was responsible for me mispronouncing Cao Cao as a cow-cow for years, because the English voice acting is something else. But, yeah, there's something to the way that it's handled. Like, the basics of a Dynasty Warriors game is that you're thrown onto this map where it's a fairly sizable map most of the time, and you have two different factions basically fighting over the territory. There's a bar near the corner that basically moves one way or the other, depending on which side is winning more at the time. And throughout your time on that map, you're going around helping other people fight off certain forces, taking objectives, saving people in the nick of time, and cutting through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yeah. And it's like, sometimes there are three factions, but in general, it is like, it is a subgenre, and I think people may not realize how much, like, you know, it'll take other franchise. People will play like, oh, I'm going to play, what's a good example? Like Dynasty Warriors Gundam. And it takes characters who are in Gundam, like tragic figures who are messes and can barely like control themselves. And now they're like destroying like hundreds of people at a time. Right. And I think there is a degree to which people were like, oh, they're like Three Kingdoms-ing this stuff. It's like, no, they're Dynasty Warriors-ing it, because as we now know reading the books, the tone of Dynasty Warriors does not exactly match those books either.
Yeah. I played a little bit of Dynasty Warriors 8 as well as 3 over the past 2 days, and The games think a lot more highly of Xuanda than the book does, though. I guess they both think pretty highly, but the way that he's characterized in the game is very funny, because everyone in the game has a call as a cry for help situation where it's like, hey, you need to get your ass over here and help me. And Xuanda's is like, I'll never be defeated, or something fairly generic. But if you end up in riding over to him, and he's like, oh, you figured out that I was in trouble. I'm really sorry to burden you like this.
That's sort of a theme across the books, where everyone, like, in Three Kingdoms, a lot of the reveal is that the ancient warlords who were vying for the future of China were also kind of dipshits. And that's part of the fun, at least for me. But there's a large degree to which, like, there's, you know, I mentioned it on a previous episode of the podcast, but, like, one of the sequences is the one where Cao Cao is, plans to stab Dong Zhuo, and then gets caught and makes a bunch of excuses and runs away. But in Dynasty Warriors, the way that scene goes is that he, like, tries to stab Dong Zhuo, and Dong Zhuo, like, catches him, and he's like, you'll never make me surrender, and he, like, kung fus his way out of the room. And I was like, no, that's not that guy.
Also, when you're fighting the yellow scarves, they actually use straight-up magic. They're like, oh, we're gonna pelt you with ice while you're trying to come after us, and oh, this boss of this level is going to summon lightning if you leave them alone for too long. It dramatizes things in terms of just turning everyone into a superhero, and also gives lots of characters who don't have significant roles in the book significant roles here, like Dio-chan. Since Dynasty Warriors 3, or maybe even earlier, is a pretty capable character you can play as in terms of fighting, when she's never in a position to fight in the books. And it's kind of funny, because in Dynasty Warriors 8, if you end up, there's a mission where Lu Bu appears, and of course you are not supposed to pursue Lu Bu, though he will absolutely pursue you. And if you run into a specific direction and decide to attack Dio-chan for a bit, or end up knocking her out of the fight, Lu Bu becomes enraged and he kills you within like 30 seconds. He just hauls ass to wherever you are and wails on you until it's game over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of at least of the games that I played, that's sort of a truism across across Three Kingdoms games, is that they do a lot of work to make female characters have more of a role than the book does, which I think is partially a reflection of modern values, you know, because, like, these books were written at a time that was definitely more misogynist than our current time, and, you know, like, as, you know, there's not much value in sitting here and, like, you know, wagging my finger at people from however many thousand years ago, but the book is, like, does, you know, ignore the contributions of women quite a bit, and also because society at that time didn't allow them much room for it, and so the games, in trying to sort of present themselves to modern sensibilities, try and give women more of a role, and that leads to some interesting stuff.
Yeah, and it's interesting to look at the time frame of that, too, because you didn't see a lot of that happening in early 2000s with the games. Like, for the most part, they were, well, still, like, games from that era, which were pretty sexist across the board most of the time. But Dynasty Warriors 3, you could play as Dio-chan, and that was a 2001 or 2002 game, so that was kind of massive. And also, Creative Assembly, who has faced shit in the past for adding a female character to a game where people gnash their teeth and go and complain about historical inaccuracies or whatever, I didn't see much of that happen when they created a new female general for Total War Three Kingdoms, which was nice, but it was also like, it's interesting how it's kind of just accepted as the norm within Dynasty Warriors when other franchises cause a huge row over it.
Well, You're actually wrong on several degrees there, which we will get to when we talk about Three Kingdoms. Sadly, I wish you were right. But yeah, like, I mean, another example that I've brought up previously on the podcast, but like when I played Dynasty Warriors 8 and you fight the battle, I fought the battle where Sun Jian gets killed. I was playing as Sun Ren, aka Lady Sun, who also in some texts is referred to as Sun Shang Chen, I believe. And when the moment came that he was killed, I suspect that this is just like he says this basically to like there's a adjusted dialogue for whoever you're currently playing as. But like as he was on his deathbed, he's like, "Oh, Sun Ren, come here. I know you're the most capable one of all of us, and you can keep my stupid shithead sons in line." And you're like, "This is not the text." I love it, but this is not how that book went.
Yeah, it's also. It's also fun how various characters like Zhongfei are... It feels like it's pretty accurate in how they treat them as larger-than-life figures that basically tower over everyone else. And I feel like they get the brashness of Zhongfei down pat in these games.
Mm-hmm. I think the most fun I had with Dynasty Warriors recently was actually with Dynasty Warriors 8... Empires. That's it. Dynasty Warriors 8 Dynasty would be a very bad name. Yes. Dynasty Warriors 8 Empires, which doesn't have the normal Dynasty Warriors modes as much, but it does have a mode where you create your own character and are sort of let loose into it, like an open world version of the Three Kingdoms. And you can like move around and like change your allegiances and like build your own faction and stuff. And it was really like, you know, it's still Dynasty Warriors. And honestly, I think a lot of times Dynasty Warriors, the mechanics are a little bit lacking is my personal feeling. They have some cool stuff in there, but they're ultimately a little bit shallow. Just my opinion. But I had a really good time with playing with the politics of the game where like, There's so many weird, like, first of all, like, I was moving around the country as a, you know, a mercenary, and that was hard because, like, gosh, it's just hard to live as a mercenary woman on your own, because I created a woman. So I signed on with Sun Jian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started fighting for him, and the default difficulty settings were such that as a person who's played enough Dynasty Warriors, I was, like, the hero of every battle, basically. And so there came a point where I was like, hang on, like, I mean, you know, he's made me like a general, he's given me promotions and stuff, but like, Sun Jian hasn't done a damn thing. I have basically built this empire for him by winning all these battles. I had a Lu Bu moment, and I was like, I'm gonna rebel and overthrow him, and my two best friends were like, yeah, we're here for you, and the rest of the faction was like, no, and it went badly for me, and I had to strike out on my own, start over from nothing, and then I came for him and took over his empire. But the other part that was fun about that is I was recruiting a mix of, like, you know, real characters, but also it has online connectivity, and it will bring in other people's player characters as just, like, random mercenaries. So I was, like, it was me and, I recruited Chen Gong, and then Lord Sasuke, and it's like, okay, and like Lord Sasuke was wearing sunglasses, and it was just like, this is weird. I ended up recruiting a lot of, like, I recruited a cat girl, and I recruited like a dude who was dressed up like Max Payne, but I don't know what, maybe that's just coincidence, maybe he was going for the Matrix, I don't know. It was a very weird experience, but there's something really satisfying about that and having those interactions with, like, a mix of, like, bizarrely out-of-place OCs and, like, the original characters, as stilted as the writing is.
Yeah, it's... Tecmo Koei and Omega Force have a lot of fun with their settings, it feels like. Like, you see that a bit in their... other spin-off Musou games like Gundam or Hyrule Warriors or Fire Emblem Warriors, but they tend to get a lot of leeway to do whatever they want, and the results are usually pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. I will say Fire Emblem Warriors sucks, but that's an unfortunate exception.
Yeah.
So moving on, we both played some Total War Three Kingdoms. I will quickly address up front, since you already mentioned it, the character that Jen was referring to is Zhang Jiang, and she is the Bandit Queen. And there are two things about this. One is she's not a fictitious, she's not a fictional character. She's a character who in history is disputed whether she is one person or two, but she definitely existed.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
And then and actually the game plays with that in a fun way where there's like, there are like story events that you can trigger where it's like, okay, well, here's your sister. And do you want to like spread the reputation between the two of you? Do you want to like pretend that you're both the same person? There's some stuff you can do with that. That's really cool. And the other thing is the community has absolutely been shitty about it.
yeah, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because they went through all of this like a few years ago with the Total War Rome 2 and some of the expansions they were doing for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's disappointing because it seems like, considering how much of Three Kingdoms is already like a mix between history and fiction, and how people have been taking creative liberties with that series for over 2 decades now, you'd think that people would be cooler about it, but PC RTS fans are not, well, not RTS in this case, PC strategy fans aren't exactly known for their progressiveness, I guess.
Yeah, and it hasn't been terrible. I don't want to give that impression, but it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been without issue. And speaking on the idea of like female representation in the game, I actually do also want to take the game to task a little bit, because Zhang Jiang is the only playable female faction leader, to a point that doesn't necessarily make sense. Like, there are other women in the game, like Empress He, who are faction leaders. You just can't play as them for some reason, and I find that really frustrating.
That stinks. Hopefully, mm-hmm. I know that they've been doing a lot of expansions and DLC for that, so fingers crossed they get better about that over time, even though we shouldn't have to hope that stuff gets better through paid DLC.
Yeah. And, you know, they've done a good job of, they've been releasing, DLC, but also, as they call it, free LC, along with it, adding basic like upgrades to the game alongside new content, and that also has included like the most recent patch was 1.5.0, aka A World Betrayed, which came with their latest DLC, and along with that they added a bunch of female hero units. Like they added the Dakiao sisters, who are the ones that Cao Cao wrote a poem about how much he wanted to fuck them. They're playable heroes now. Also, they added Lu Bu's faction, and like Dao Chan is one of his best generals. So there's some they're doing some stuff with that. I hope they lean further in that direction. But also, there is a degree to which like the game supports mods, and that does to. Given their angle for the Total War series in general, there is a sense. There's a logic to leaving that somewhat to mods, because they don't, you know, they're not the people out here being like, well, we can't have like, you know, there can only carry like how many arrows an archer could realistically carry. They aren't those like, you know, jerking off to like logistics and actual history, but they do want to carry an actual vibe. And it is kind of, Three Kingdoms is kind of about the ancient world's biggest dick waving contest, and that is important to a degree, you know,
for sure.
But you've played some of Total War Three Kingdoms. How did you find it?
So in the past, I've approached other Total War games and bounced right the hell off them. I think the last one, well, before this, I was trying to play Medieval 2 Total War, like when I was very young on one of my, like a family shared computer that we had, and I didn't understand any of it. I kind of hated it, and I was very familiar with how that game felt, so when I heard people talk about Total War Three Kingdoms, it was like, I have some misgivings about this franchise, but this looks cool, so I'll give it a shot. It feels entirely different from that to such a degree that it's impressive, because they totally do something similar to what Dynasty Warriors does in terms of having the general stand out and stuff like that, except it's mixed with more traditional strategy. So you have this fascinating mix of doing the normal strategy thing of getting your troops in order, collecting resources, bargaining, waging war, all that sort of stuff. But the main players, or at least any of the named characters in Three Kingdoms, tend to be considered heroic eunuchs. Heroic units.
Not some of eunuchs. Them are heroic eunuchs.
True.
Those are also in the game.
But yeah, you have heroic units, and they do a lot of fun to give them character even within a... Like, even with when you think about stuff like StarCraft 2 or Classic Warcraft or any of those other games, you had units that were important and stood out, but I feel like the ones in Three Kingdoms stand out even more because they're given cinematic moments when they're fighting other units like them, and it's really cool.
And they also do a really, like, one of the things that has impressed me the most, I mean, first of all, I have also tried to play Total War games in the past. I tried to play Shogun 2 and bounced off. And first, it's really playable. It's really fun. I've completed several campaigns. I've put, I think, 25 hours into it, which I know by strategy game standards is not that much, but by me and strategy game standards is quite a lot. And one of the things that they do that I think is really cool is the way various faction leaders have mechanics that are, first of all, unique, but also, like, are very, like, clever callbacks to the way they're written in the book. Like, as I say, they just added Lu Bu as a faction, and he has a faction mechanic where he basically, like, first of all, he has a baseline constant level of corruption because he thinks governing is for idiots, because he's an idiot. But then also he has a mechanic where he basically just has a list of names of people he wants to beat in combat, and as you check names off that list, he basically can use it to convince people to join him because they're like, I mean, he's Lu Bu, he's the greatest warrior. And it's just really fun having this, like seeing another army, and it's like, you may be normally encouraged to run away because you're like, oh, they're stronger than me. But you have this moment of like, wait, I'm Lu Bu, and they're on my list, and I haven't checked them off yet. If I run up and beat them, Lu Bu gets permanently stronger. There's also a fun thing, just like the way they treat people. Like when I was playing as Sang Jian, the Bandit Queen, because I was both a Bandit Queen and a woman, when it became time for me to become the Empress of China, not a lot of people, like, people were willing to cooperate with me at first, but the more powerful I got, the more people hated me. And so when it came time to sort of like consolidate the throne, it was a huge fucking pain in the ass because even my allies hated me. No one wanted to play ball. And there's a similar thing with Lu Bu, where people don't necessarily hate you, but, like, in any circumstance, no officer worth their salt will ever surrender to you. So they're like, no, listen, you can let me go or you can kill me. I'm not fucking joining you. You're a dumbass.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I feel like I can understand the mindset between both of those, but for very different reasons. Like, I feel like a bunch of people from that era would get really irate about following a woman out to battle and having her as her leader. But in terms of Lu Bu, it's like, if I make you angry, you have a better you have a higher likelihood of killing me than even someone like Cao Cao, and you seem like you're just going to break things and not keep them together all that well, so good luck with everything.
And speaking of which, Cao Cao has the faction leader ability where he has a special currency called influence that he can use to just tell people that shit's happening and they'll believe him. He can just be like, oh yeah, no, Sun Jian, Empress He is totally about to declare war on you. And Sun Jian will go, what? I'll declare war on her first! And you're like, okay, you're an idiot. This is great. everybody has their own mechanics like that, and it makes them feel really distinct. And also, there's, yeah, I don't know, they've done a really incredible job. I think it's the best Three Kingdoms game I've seen. I definitely recommend it. And also, I recommend most of the DLC. If we're going deep on this, which this is an entire episode about the games, we might as well go deep on it. I will say quickly, of the pieces of DLC, I think Mandate of Heaven and A World Betrayed are worth getting. You can get Tao Qian and White Tiger Yawn for free, so there's no reason not to get those. The other pieces of DLC are the Eight Princes, which I understand is some content from much later in the book, or maybe even after the book. I can't tell because we haven't gotten there. Yellow Turban Rebellion and Reign of Blood. Yellow Turban Rebellion is a maybe. Eight Princes is a not, probably not, because I understand there's not a lot of unique content. It's mostly just recycled stuff. And then Reign of Blood is the thing that Total War has been doing for ages, and they need to knock it off. Where they're like, hey, we're going to have a DLC that adds blood to the game. And that's all it does. Give us $3.
What? That's I guess that's why it says mostly negative on the Steam reviews for that.
Yeah, people aren't a big fan of that for some reason. Weird, right?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So Yellow Turban Rebellion is the one of those I would recommend the most, but a lot of the Yellow Turban content is done better. Like, there are characters you don't have access to from that, but then, like, the actual leaders of the Yellow Turbans who led the original rebellion are in Mandate of Heaven, which is a much meatier DLC and is much cooler. So if you're rolling in dough, go ahead and get both. But if you're picking, get Mandate of Heaven and A World Betrayed. Those are the two to get.
Yeah, it's funny how those are also the two most expensive ones.
I mean, they're meaty, you know?
Yeah.
They both add new time periods that you can start in. Is also part of the thing, because when you start, you can be like, okay, I want to start as the Yellow Turban Rebellion begins, or I want to start once Dong Zhuo has taken power, or I want to start after Dong Zhuo has died, or I want to start in the Eight Princes era, whatever the hell that means. You have multiple options, and each of these DLCs are adding one, so that's part of it.
Nice.
And also based on that, some characters aren't available. Like, you can't pick the Emperor if you're picking Eight Princes, because the Emperor's long dead. but if you control him, maybe he won't be. And also, the Emperor is a fun one where, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but the Emperor's mechanic basically is, I mean, like, this is the Emperor of the Han, who was the last Emperor of the Han. And basically his mechanic is that you boot it up and immediately you're like, oh, my budget, I'm losing like 10,000 gold a turn. What the hell is going on? Because you're just so rife with corruption, and the game becomes about trying to find a way to, like, live long enough and shave costs enough that you can stabilize a collapsing government, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I like it when these sorts of games get into alternate history stuff where it's like, if you think you can do a better job than this person whose failure is well recorded within the annals of history, go right ahead.
Yeah, and yet, but they also incentivize you through various ways to also, like, their rewards for being true to history. Like, it would be easy to play Xuanda and just be like, okay, I'm going to be dishonorable and conquer China, right? And you can do that. But you get buffs to, like, you and Zhang Fei and Xiaoji Long and Lord Guan if you play like Xuanda and you, like, refuse promotions and stuff.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
It's a really cool way of balancing that stuff. don't know. I speak, you know, this was my game of the year last year on a personal level. So, of course, I have a lot of nice things to say about it.
Yeah. And I'm someone who's tried to get into strategy games for a while, and a lot of them just don't sit well with me just because I guess I don't have the brain for it, especially real-time strategy games where it feels like collecting resources and fighting, I'm always one step behind because it takes ridiculous cognitive resources to excel in that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm glad that they've made a Total War game that's more palatable for me and also features a bunch of characters that I've grown to really like over the course of reading this book.
Really quickly, I will touch on the game's actually called Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which is up to Romance of the Three Kingdoms 13 now. Basically, the things that I hear are that the last good entry was on the PS2. I need to do more research on that, but also a lot of them on, like, you can get almost every single one of them on PC, but most of them, until the most recent couple, are not even translated, which is obviously a hang-up. And it seems like there's some good to be had from that series for sure. I am ignorant, and if you want to learn, you're going to have to do some homework because it seems like it's a little hard to wade through the number of entries because they're not of consistent quality, and maybe the right one to play is old and hard to get.
Yeah, I also want to briefly mention that one of the cool things about Dynasty Warriors on the PS2 is it's one of the few console games from back then that actually had expansions. Like, the one that I was playing was straight up an expansion for 3, and it was expected that people would already own 3, and it had this thing where you would basically load up the disc for 3 while you had Extreme Legends open, and that would basically apply everything to it the way that a PC expansion would apply something to the base game. And that's just something that was straight up unheard of on consoles, especially on a PS2 back then.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really interesting choice.
Yeah. I tried to replicate it using my homebrew method with an emulator and stuff, and it did not go well, but for that time, that was a pretty cool feature.
And I think the only other Three Kingdoms recommendation I have is a game called The Sims 4. You can create the Three Kingdoms there. I made Cao Cao, like, a real dog lover. And Lu Bu is just his neighbor who's relentlessly a shithead to him, and it's very funny to me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Is there anything else you want to touch on in general?
Can't think of anything at the moment other than mentioning apparently there's a Dynasty Warriors movie that finished shooting in 2017, which it seems like a weird thing to, like, wouldn't that just be a Three Kingdoms movie? But I guess whenever it ends up coming out, if it hasn't come out already, it'll be interesting to see what differentiates itself from the other numerous film adaptations of Three Kingdoms.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be interesting. Okay, so I call you General sometimes. This is a play on the word general and also that your name is Jen. This is very clever. But as we all know, you wouldn't just be a general. As according to Three Kingdoms tradition, you would be general that does blank. What do you think, Jen? What's your station?
Trying to think of a positive thing. General who plays many games.
Sure. Not the most imaginative, but I'll let you off the hook.
Okay. How about you,
to
then?
Set you free. I'm a general who suppresses the straits.
Oh, I like how yours was much more ambitious than mine was.
Well, I mean, like, they're usually something like general who controls the South, and spoilers, they don't fucking control the South. So, Yeah, no, I'm definitely out there suppressing the straits. That's how I do.
Hell yeah.
You could be general who waves the flag.
I'd be cool with that.
It's abstract enough that it could mean a lot of things, but it sounds cool. Anyway, I think that's it for us here. Three Kingdoms is a great series of books, but even if you decide that it's too much for you, you're wrong. But, you know, you're entitled to your opinions. And maybe, instead, you should consider playing some Three Kingdoms games. And through osmosis, you will get through and learn a lot about these characters and the setting and just have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But until next time, Jen, would you like to promote yourself?
Sure. I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. You can find most of my stuff on patreon.com or patreon.com/... You can find most of my stuff on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. If we just put out an episode on Beastars for Oops All Anime. And we're still working on Psychedelica of the Ashen Hawk for Novel Not New, which you can find at readinggames.online.
And I am Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar, SixDetmar. I'm also on scanlinemedia.com and patreon.com/scanlinemedia. And I just put out an article as we're recording this about I know you've probably heard a lot of people give their takes on Tom Nook. I actually did a proper job of it. I wasn't just like, he's evil or he's great. I actually looked at the guy as a guy. And I think, I don't know. I think I had some interesting takeaways from it.
Yeah. You definitely found a position that I haven't really seen online that much, which is good.
Turns out people are complicated. Even Tanookies. But until next time, folks, we may have had a quick stoppage. But read on.
Read on.
Read on. There, that was the Jackson one.